Going to say hello now to Terry Flanagan, who's at his home in Dublin 15, because Éanan Ealaíne, our colleague Éanan Ealaíne, has another book out. My goodness, is there any end to this woman's writing abilities? And Terry Flanagan, well, he wasn't the only one. Terry Flanagan was at the launch the other night. Terry!
Well, I wasn't just there. There was a great support for Éanan there from the Mooney Goes Wild team. You were there yourself. And one thing I noticed when I was leaving too, you were actually buying a copy of the book, so you must have enjoyed it as well.
I bought two copies, Terry, not one. Anyway, tell us all, did you get to speak to the great lady herself?
I did indeed, of course I did. As soon as the launch was over, Derek, I caught Éanan, I took her over to the side and we had a chat about the new book. And it's called The Great Irish Biodiversity Book. Éanan, congratulations on your new book. It's beautiful.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, Terry. I'm pleased with it myself, I must say.
It's actually one of a collection of books, is that right? A set of books.
Well, I mean, the collection isn't mine. The collection is Gill's. Gill's were the publishers. And my one is called The Great Irish Biodiversity Book. And this is the seventh in a series that was The Great Irish Weather Book, The Great Irish Science Book.
Yeah, that was Luke O'Neill.
Yeah, The Great Irish Farm Book, The Great Irish Politics Book, History Book, Gaelic Games Book, and now mine, which is The Great Irish Biodiversity Book. Easily the best by a long shot.
Of course it is. Now, I've read it. It's very easy to read. Why didn't you call it The Great Irish Nature Book?
Ah, come on, Terry. Nature isn't a proper term for a book like this.
But it's full of nature. It's full of plants. It's full of animals. That's what I would have called it.
Well, people say, oh, we're out in nature. What's your nature? You're a good-natured person.
Yeah.
I mean, or wildlife. I mean, there's books already called Irish Nature. There's books already called Irish Wildlife. So this is the one with biodiversity in the title, because biodiversity is where it's all happening. We have a biodiversity crisis. We had this forum on biodiversity. So biodiversity is a word that's out there. People know about it. And now this is a book that's actually called biodiversity, so it's linked to it. So people who are concerned about biodiversity or think their children should know more about it will be drawn to this rather than yet another wildlife book, which could be about baby rabbits for all I know.
Who is it geared towards?
Well, it's geared towards everyone that has a brain in their heads, but in this format, and because there's beautiful, beautiful drawings in it.
There's no photographs at all.
No. It's very hard to get photographs. Drawings are great. Barry Falls is a great illustrator. Yeah. And so when you see a book with pictures like this, you automatically think, oh, this is for children. And indeed, it is aimed at children, maybe from the age of 10, who can read it for themselves, or for smaller children whom parents might want to read it to. But actually what I wrote, I wrote the words in it, he did the pictures, and the words are all written in language that a 10, 12 year old can read. And that's really what newspapers, articles, anything for grown-ups is written that you're aimed at a 12-year-old child. So, I mean, if adults buy this for themselves, they won't be patronised, they won't feel that they're reading a baby infant's book, there's not big print in it, it's the proper size print. So I would posit that it's actually for everybody. Adults can pretend they're buying it for their grandchildren, but in fact, they'll be reading it themselves first and buying a second one for their own house, I'm sure, because it's really good in the sense that it's all Irish biodiversity and it tells us the story of what's happening in Ireland today in 2024.
Well, I tell you one thing. I think it should be in every primary school in the country, this book.
And every secondary school as well, I think. It should be there too, because what it's doing is explaining what's actually happening to our different habitats. And what I've done with the book, you see, is I've taken the wildlife that occurs here, the biodiversity, into different habitats. Because, I mean, every habitat's going to have herbivores, plants making the food, carnivores eating the plants, decomposers breaking it down. But the plants that are in a woodland, for example, are going to be quite different to the plants you have in a bog, and they're going to be quite different again to what you might have growing in a lake or somewhere like that. But they'll all have this particular layer. Then you'll have something eating the plants, then you'll have something eating the animals, and then you'll have the decomposers in most cases, except for the bog, where I make a great song and a dance about that section when we talk about the fact that there's none and you get all kinds of things in the bog that didn't break down.
You've picked six habitats here, and they're habitats that everyone is familiar with. And you might be a school child in, say, the centre of Ireland. You might never get a chance of getting to see the seashore. And yet, with this book, they can see it.
Well, that's right. I took six habitats, really. Woodlands, rivers and lakes, the seaside, grasslands, boglands and gardens and parks. They're the six, the six sections.
And you mentioned gardens and parks there. One thing I liked about the gardens is you looked at nature in the garden at night time.
Well, I looked at wildlife in the garden at night time, Terry.
Oh, I see.
Yes, indeed.
Back to that nature again.
Because what happens at night time, of course, is you're completely different environmental circumstances. It's dark. it's more moist, not as hot, so you're going to have the things that might dry out in the daytime. So we're looking at snails and slugs and things like that, things that are able to negotiate in the dark, things like moths and bats and owls. There's a chance of seeing all of those. So a different world wakens up at night, and I did it for the garden rather than any other place, because people might be inclined to go out to their garden at night. You mightn't really want to go to the seashore, you mightn't really want to go to a river or lake in the middle of the night, but your garden is somewhere you could actually go and see these things. And that's what I want with the book. I want people to think that learning about how our world works, learning about our biodiversity, is not just for a few nerds like us on the radio, Terry, but it is actually for everybody, and you can get into this in an easy way.
Tell me a little bit about the Great Irish Nature Challenge. I'm back to the nature again.
The Great Irish Nature Challenge, I suppose, is something like what you might call a bucket list in a sense, because what I've done at the end of a lot of the chapters is I've taken four or five different things that it's your challenge to go and find. These are rare in Ireland, like, for example, the rhinoceros beetle, the gooseander, the stinkhorn, the Kerry slug. They're the woodland ones, for example. And I mean, the gooseander is a duck that nests in trees. I mean, and they're around in Glendalough. Rhinoceros beetles is the little one. It's not the huge rhinoceros beetle that you get in other parts, but we do have it in Ireland. So the challenge is that they're after each one. You have to look for a robin's pincushion in the wonder about fields. What are these things? Can you find them? Tick them off. And in fact, the last Great Irish Nature Challenge, I give an example of all of these woodlands on a map of Ireland. So even if you are not near the sea, it's only 60 miles to the sea from any part of Ireland. So you can, in your lifetime, I'm sure, get to the sea once and see something that's there. So that's why I have this Great Nature Challenge, because it isn't just, here's a book, yeah, look at it, that's grand. But you're going to go out and find them for yourself, and it's a challenge for you to do, particularly if you're giving it to teenagers or 12-year-olds or 10-year-olds. That could be, we're going on our holidays this year and we're really going to find a Kerry slug, because they're not just in Kerry and they're in old woodlands, and we don't know that there might be more of them than we used to think, because more people are looking for them in places where they are actually finding them.
And you have some really interesting pieces of information, nuggets of information for children, things like goose barnacles.
Oh yeah, that's a great one altogether. I'm talking about being on the seashore and you're looking at things that have been washed in, and you could have an old lump of wood that has been under the sea, and then these things, these black and white things with long necks, are stuck onto these. And long ago people thought these were actually birds, that this is where the barnacle geese, which are a migratory species, comes here in the wintertime, never see an egg, never see a bird's nest, and then these things come in with a lot. Sure, they must have come from those, so where else would they have come from? And then, strictly speaking, they're fish, they're not geese, and you could eat them on Fridays, so you could really do a Jesuitical thing about them. And then, of course, I have ridiculous things in it, I suppose, in a way. I'm talking about ambergris. Now, ambergris is actually, I suppose, the gallstones or lumps of stick that comes out of a dead whale. The whale is dead, it has gastro troubles, it's all decomposed, and then as it rots and breaks down, these lumps of ambergris come in, sometimes on land, and they are beyond valuable, because what they're used for is fixing perfumes. I remember in Moby Dick, the fella found a sick whale, and the sick whale, it was dead actually, but he hauled it in and opened it up, and he said the ambergris he got from that was worth far more than all of the oil that they had been 2 years catching. So it's a really important thing, and people do find it on the beaches in Ireland occasionally. Now, I didn't have anything to show to Barry to actually draw a picture of it, so you'd have to be looking at great soft putty like things and wondering, is it ambergris? And it's something else to be looking for, and to know that such things are possible.
Wasn't it thought many, many years ago that it might have been the poo from whales?
Well, sure, they didn't know what part of whales it actually came from, but it's whales that were ill. I think it's something wrong with their intestine. So it probably is in the poo department to a certain extent. But I mean, the poo comes out. This is actually what was in the whale when it died, because it was ill and didn't digest its food properly, I think, is what they reckon it might be. But you can't manufacture it. It's sick whales or nothing.
Yeah. Right, getting back to something a little bit more serious. Biodiversity is in trouble. And I know you go around to lots and lots of schools. What's the reaction from children when you tell them this?
Well, I don't want to be too pessimistic talking to children. I mean, biodiversity is in trouble. like in the 1970s when I was in school, or even after that, we had twice as much biodiversity in Ireland as we have now. Now, the kids in school are not responsible for that. I mean, they didn't get rid of half the biodiversity. It happened on our watch. So if you go into school and say the world is coming to an end and the biodiversity is all gone, so you could be handing around hankies. So I don't tend to go in and tell them that this is what's happening. I go in and tell them these are the interesting things that we have. Do you know this? What's these trees? These are important. So to accentuate the positive rather than bare and baldy, when there's no point in telling the kids the bad news because they didn't cause it. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to end up with anxiety about the world that can't be coped with, because if people really get to be in despair about this, well, then they do nothing at all, and that's terrible.
And what about the future? Do you see some positivity there?
Well, I do, yeah. I mean, when people realise that they can do something, then a lot of them do it. I mean, that No Mow May, for example, that only came in a few years ago, where you didn't mow your lawn to extinction and let it go for a while, has been taking off at a great rate. There's been good example given by local authorities. People see the wildflower meadows. They can understand that if there's more flowers, there's going to be more pollinators, there's going to be more bees. Even Finnishy College has its front grounds. Everybody going by in the Lewis can see that. So when people can do that sort of thing, that's quite positive. We have new biodiversity officers now in every county council. I mean, this is a great step. A couple of years ago, all they had was maybe a heritage one or an education one. But I mean, to have one that's specifically for biodiversity in every county, that's a huge step forward as well. So I do see hope in the sense that it's not all gone, and climate change is not really affecting it in Ireland. What's affecting biodiversity in Ireland is land use change. And if they change the land use one way, they can change it back the other. We can have more hedgerows, we can have more woodlands, we can plant more trees, we can bring it back. All we need to do is A, know about it, and B, do something about it. Well, they can't say they won't know about it after my great Irish biodiversity book, published by Gills, costs £25 and is available everywhere.
And more details about Éin Ní Leabhar's book can be found on our website, rte.ie/Mooney. People always say to me, Éin Ní Leabhar has such a distinctive voice. She has indeed. And she's a great broadcaster and a superb writer.